You're listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or
shame.
Today,
I think, is going to be a really great topic. We're going to be talking about our own experiences when it comes to food, when it comes to abuse, when it comes to eating disorders, etc. We're going to talk about our journeys and talk about why it is that it impacts what we do now with our clients and why and what hopefully we envision for the future in the nutrition field, because things are changing. I do think things are changing. But anyway, we would love anybody who is watching, if anything we talk about today does resonate with you, or you've got any questions or any comments, anything at all, please do comment, because, you know, we're going to just kind of go with things today, because it's quite a personal topic, and I think it probably is going to be quite an emotive subject. And we could probably talk about this for hours and hours and hours. So please, if you are watching, I keep saying it, please say hello if you're watching the replay, hashtag replay, and say hello. Just let us know that you are here, please. And we'll get started. So I was just having this conversation. We were just talking briefly before we started about where do we start with this? Where do we start? Because we've both got a tale to tell. We've both had a journey. And, you know, I mean, for me, and I spoke about this earlier, I spoke about this in my post this morning. I guess my food's always been a big, big thing for me. Okay. And, you know, it's not just about, and we talk about this all of the time. I'm from an Italian family. Food was always such an integral part of our life. It was such an integral part of everything that we did. And then when I was 19, I was diagnosed with anorexia, and that was a massive kind of thing, I guess, for me and my family, even though at the time I really didn't believe that was happening. I really didn't believe it was going on, because I, at that time when I was 19, you know, I didn't look particularly, you know, like, you know, I didn't look, I mean, it did get, there were points during my life where I did get very, very thin, and I did get very, very poorly. But when I actually got diagnosed, it wasn't obvious to the obvious eye. It was obvious to people around me because of the behaviors that I was engaging in. But because I looked in the mirror and I didn't see a particularly skinny person, and I thought I was just being healthy. I thought I was just, so what I'm trying to say here is that my body didn't, and this is the thing, is we get so caught up on our bodies and what we look like and our shape and our size, that I think we forget that actually it's your state of mind that reflects an eating disorder more than anything else. And it's the same when it comes to so many other things. Would you agree with that, Jeff?
Yeah, well, and anorexia in particular, that's exactly what that particular eating disorder is. It's related to your state of mind, and, you know, this incredible sort of unwarranted fear of gaining weight or having, you know, it's a distorted view of your body is what's driving it in many ways.
It's funny though, actually, because, you know, that I didn't, and this was the other thing, that I really struggled to get my head around at the time was, I didn't have, you know, I didn't have body dysmorphia. And at that time, you know, there were times when I did get really thin, and, because again, I want to say that an eating disorder as well, I thought it would be this static thing, this thing that, you know, was just this thing that, you know, was static, was something that was just, it presented itself, you know, consistently all the time, but it didn't. You know, I struggled with an eating disorder for over 10 years, you know, and it changed. It, you know, there were times when there were times it was stronger than others. And I think, so my point there is that there were times when I seemed to be at a healthy weight, and yet I was still battling with this eating disorder. I mean, the fact that I wasn't having periods the whole time was probably, you know, a red flag as well. But I think, yeah, I mean, I wasn't even having periods when I had children. I mean, I was told I probably wouldn't have children. So then you can imagine when I got pregnant, it was like, nah. Even my husband was like, how can that be? And then second time, my periods didn't return until after I had my children. In fact, it wasn't until after my children, I'd say, that the recovery really, really did start, because it was, you know, I remember, I'm going a bit off on a tangent here, but I remember, you know, absolutely freaking out about my children's diet. It was like, how can I do this? How can I be a parent? How can I, you know, bring my children up and feed my children and look after them if I am freaking out so much about this? And I've heard about people saying how they struggle with animals or pets because, you know, they couldn't deal with feeding their animals or pets because their diets used to freak them out. But, you know, it's different with an animal or a pet. You can, somebody else in the, you know, can deal with that. You can get your partner to deal with the feeding.
Right.
Or children, no one else can do that shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I digress. But what, you know, I think my point here is that when I was really thin, I knew I was really thin. I did. I didn't look in the mirror and go, wow, you're looking a bit fat. You know, you need to lose some weight, even though I was six stone. You know,
yeah.
No, I looked in, and at 6 stone and 5'7", you know, I looked ill. And I knew I looked ill. And I walked down the street and I knew people were watching me. I mean, my husband at the time would ram it down my neck. Everyone's looking at you. Everyone's watching you. Everyone, you know, didn't help.
Yeah.
Just putting it out there. And the other thing, I remember my husband at the time, and he'd be like, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. Sorry, this is the link with the abuse as well. You know, there was like, because he would see sometimes I'd be better with it and other times I wouldn't. So he couldn't get his head around the fact that I just seemed to be able to pick and choose when I, you know, do you know what I mean? When I could gain weight or when I could lose weight.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's like, the whole idea of, well, just stop doing that. Just stop being like that. Just stop feeling that way. And what I don't, you know, and I think that that's something that a lot of people, when we don't understand mental health, because an eating disorder is a mental health issue. It's not a nutrition issue. I mean, nutrition comes into play and there is an aspect of it, but it's actually a mental health issue. And you know, when we approach any mental health issue, this idea of, well, you're depressed, well, stop being depressed. Turn that frown upside down. You know, or anxiety, well, quit worrying about stuff. And it's like, that's not a resolution for it. And in fact, it tends to make it even worse.
No, exactly that. And I think, and, you know, I know that a lot of the time it comes from a good place. Okay.
No, it can. Yeah.
It definitely.
I know I missed some signs with my own kids. Coming from a good place where, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you don't understand it, you know, years and years ago when I didn't understand it, my thought was, well, you know, I'm trying to help them by making this particular comment or telling them this or treating it as a behavioral issue or, you know, that kind of thing.
And exactly that. And I think this is why, I mean, when it comes to my ex-husband, that wasn't the case, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, that was not coming from a place of good intention.
It was just another way of keeping me in my box. You know, it was just another way of controlling me. Because to be quite honest, I don't think he ever wanted me to recover. Because look what happened when I did.
Exactly.
You know. So, but on the other hand, you know, I did get it from you know, I'll be honest, and, you know, the people around me, my mom, you know, my family didn't always know how to best deal with it. Like you just said there, Jeff. And this is why there needs to be more awareness. There needs to be, right now, you know, we're living in a society where the focus is on people being overweight. The focus is on childhood obesity. The focus is on, what is the best, you know, if you've got a bit of extra weight, you're unhealthy. You know, all these messages that are being banged around, and, you know, you need to be healthier. You need to make healthier choices. You need to, you know, go vegan because if you eat animal products, you're going to, you know, you're unhealthy. And it's just, all of this is just kind of taking all of the light off the real issues that are going on. Because even for people that are struggling with weight and struggling with their health because of their weight on the other end of the spectrum, on the, you know, telling them to go on a diet, trying to put the blame on them, trying to tell them to just sort themselves out, is, you know, trying to say, just go into a calorie deficit, just count these calories, just don't eat this, just don't eat that, just go and lose weight and then come back. You know, sorry, because, you know, I've had a lot of clients where they've been, and, you know, they're just told that they can't go on certain medications, they can't have certain treatment, they just have to go away, go on a diet, lose weight and come back. It's just madness. And it's just, you know, it's just totally distracting from the bigger issues, the real issues that are going on. And if anything, it's driving the obesity even further.
Yeah. I mean, it really parallels mental health in a lot of ways, because in the case of somebody who's struggling with mental health issues, and this has been a problem for many years, and it's you know, becoming, I think it's going in the right direction now with the awareness and very prominent people coming out and sharing their experiences with mental health struggles, professional athletes, actors, actresses, politicians, people that have these big platforms. They're actually coming out now and expressing that they've been struggling with this. And I think that's probably helped with bringing awareness to it. And then also there seems to be a shift in the way that with mental health, that people are becoming a bit more comfortable in sharing that they have a mental health struggle. And then also people are becoming aware of a bit more aware of the fact that it's not that of how to address it, how to interact with somebody who is struggling with that, how to hear what they're saying and quit trying to fix it with sound bites and those kinds of things. And I think that what the parallel that I was kind of thinking about here with nutrition is that I think we still have that. I mean, I think there is a shift in the area of nutrition with intuitive eating becoming more and more prominent, more popular, I guess, for lack of a better word. But people thinking more of how food impacts our other aspects of our life, and realizing that, no, just like with mental health, telling someone to quit being sad or to just stop doing that, or with an autistic child, you know, treating it with like behavioral modification and kind of, you know, telling them to stop doing this, stop doing that, or with kids with ADHD, treating that, you know, how they had been treated typically. The same is true with nutrition, where it's almost the same thing. It's almost like when you address somebody who with a mental health issue inappropriately, it's the same way with nutrition. When you address the issue with food by telling them to go on a diet.
This is why I have a huge issue with people that will, you know, well, we know this anyway, you know, because obviously when we're working with our clients, we do get to know them and we do get to understand what is going on so that we can best find the approach. And this is again why, I mean, it links as well a little bit to the post that I did yesterday. And I know we were going to talk about this, but we decided to talk about this, you know, this topic instead. Mm-hmm. But, you know, about what people think that we do, you know, because writing meal plans, setting calories, being accountability person, all of those things are what a lot of people expect. But all of those things can actually drive disordered eating, you know. And I think the value that I think we provide as nutritionists or as coaches, whatever, you know, is that we don't do that. We help our clients. We hold the space for our clients to understand what is really going on. The biggest, I'll be honest with you, actually, and I'm going to put this out there, you know, the only person, I had a lot of support in and out. I was in and out of all sorts of different, you know, therapies, etc. when I was, you know, on my journey to recovery. And I'll be honest, none of it worked. None of it was, you know, it was only when I kind of then, I mean, I went and I did my own, I had to work on myself, and I, you know, and it was aside from the eating disorder. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that there are some amazing services out there doing some amazing work. I know that there are, but there is also a huge lack of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, because once it came to my recovery, my weight was quite stable. My weight wasn't as bad. I mean, I was underweight, but I wasn't as severely underweight as, you know, was previously when I was in and out of, you know, different interventions and stuff. And at that point I wasn't ready for recovery. But then when I was ready for recovery, because I was seemingly okay, because I wasn't thin enough, because I wasn't sick enough, you know, I had to find my own way. Don't get me wrong, there were many people that supported me, but they weren't the professionals in the end, you know. And
yeah,
Yeah, and I'm not, because I know, like I said, there are some amazing people out there doing some amazing work, and I just don't think there is enough of it. I don't think there's enough awareness. I don't think there are even the professionals, you know, don't get enough training in this field. And yeah, it just saddened me so much because of this lack of awareness, because of the lack of the spotlight on what is happening. I think, you know, I'm going to say it, you know, more damage is being caused.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that there's probably an aspect of it too, that is impacted by demographic, socioeconomic status and that kind of thing too, because some of these, since there is such a limitation, if somebody, you know, for example, in the NHS, my understanding is that if your BMI is not in the underweight range, you don't qualify for eating disorder treatment for anorexia. And there's a lot of people who are underweight who are perfectly healthy. And there are also people with anorexia who are within a normal BMI. There's people with anorexia in the obesity category. And that's what people don't really understand. Because it is a mental health issue. It's not a body size and shape. It's the super low BMI is an indicator that something's off, that something needs addressed. If your body weight is at a dangerously low level, there's something off. It might be anorexia. It might be a gut issue. It might be celiac. I mean, it could, but rather than treating it and looking for the symptoms of anorexia apart from size and shape of the body, I don't know. It's frustrating that's the case, and it leaves people that have gone through issues like what you've been through potentially untreated, and then especially people who can't afford to say, okay, Mike, I have anorexia, I don't qualify for NHS services or Medicare in the U.S. or Medicaid or whatever. Maybe your insurance company won't provide services, so now you can't afford it unless you have a lot of money at your disposal.
And the scary thing is as well, and I know this is, you know, a lot to do with the NHS being underfunded and stuff, you know, is even when, and I've seen this with young people, you know, as you know, I'm a teacher, I still work in schools, you know, I come across this and younger, I mean, you know, young people, boys and girls, you know, I think it's on the rise in boys, you know, and I think, well, yeah, anyway, I'll go on to this, but, you know, younger and younger, you know, girls of 8, 9, 10 with eating disorders. And, you know, it's just the worrying thing is that even when they do get picked up, even when they do, you know, when the NHS do work with them, it's a case of just, we just need to refeed. I mean, that, you know, that whole thing of refeeding, I remember it, you know, it's refeed. Even just the way that we approach, you know, even just the language that we use, I think could change. But anyway, you know, I think there is just needs to be this kind of they just want the work solely focuses on refeeding the person, refeeding the child. Then once they've got to a healthy weight, once they've got to a healthy BMI, I mean, don't get me wrong, okay. And it's not that I've got an issue with refeeding in itself. I just think it's the connotations of the way that, do you know what I mean? And I think the thing is, don't get me wrong, is that I understand the reasoning, because once a person's, you know, weight has been restored, they can think more clearly. They can think better. So it has a massive impact on, you know, on the cognitive processes that are going on. Mm-hmm. But I've seen so many young people go through the system, you know, be refed, get back to a healthy weight, and then they're not given the tools to then deal with any triggers that may appear further down the line. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's when you learn about the how they address anorexia in particular with eating disorder treatment. You know, there are mental health and related issues that are addressed through the treatment process, but the first step is that weight restoration, at least to a healthy-ish range where your body is functioning, your mind is functioning, so that you can actually do the work on the mental health side of things. Because until your body is functioning at a certain level, you know, when you're, and I'm sure you can attest to this, when you're at a super low weight and when you're not providing yourself even And that's the thing with anorexia. It's not just that somebody's not quite eating enough. I mean, we see people who are dieting, they're not quite eating enough. They're a little, they're moody, they're off, their brain is foggy. And imagine that at the, you know, way at the extreme, to the point where they can't even process just day to day thought processes. And so, yeah, of course you do have to get their, that's acutely where they start is, okay, let's get their nutrition up to where their brain is starting to function okay, so that they can then, do the work.
And that is the first stage, don't get me wrong.
It often kind of, that's often like they like, okay, once we have that, then we have the worst part out of the way. And that's not, that's just like the little first step.
This is what happened to me. This is why, you know, my weight would get restored. And then because I didn't understand what the triggers were. I didn't understand. I was in and out over a decade. I was in and out of therapy, and I was in and out of different sorts of, like I said, different sorts of things. And it wasn't until I actually, and funny enough, even our own nutrition training, though, you know, as good as it was and as good as it set me on my way, even that I think was littered with things that, you know, could trigger somebody. But anyway, you know, luckily we did have some modules on eating disorders and stuff like that, which was super insightful. And it wasn't until I did that I actually was able to realize just how it had all come about, just how it had, you know, how the precipitating factors were an impact, then how the environment was an impact, how what people were saying. Does that make sense? I don't know why I've gone off on that really, but I think my point was that, you know, even in during my road of recovery, when my weight would get restored, I wasn't recovered. And so this is why then, because I was then just left to my own devices, I would then, you know, relapse or lapse, you know. I did lapse, it wasn't just relapses, they were lapses.
And yeah, that makes complete sense, because you never dealt with the root issue. The root issue was not that you weren't eating enough. There's something else. The not eating enough was a symptom of the greater problem.
The other thing that I really, really wanted to say as well, and I know that there are not everybody agrees with me on this, but I genuinely do think, and one thing I think that really kept me stuck for, well, apart from, you know, they were, my eating disorder had a function. It played a role. Okay. And this is the biggest thing I think that people need to understand and realize is that, you know, there is a reason why people, you know, once the eating disorder kicks in, once it takes a hold, there is a function. There is a reason. It's got its advantages. Okay. It was keeping me safe. It was helping me to avoid all of those more difficult things that I was going to have to deal with. Okay. And I think that is, you know, that's really important as well, because I think, like you said before, it's not often about the weight. It's often about the fact that all of the other bigger stuff that you feel like it's the same with, and I say, this is, sounds awful as well, but it's often the same with, you know, when we diet and we self-sabotage, you know, there is this fear that if we actually do get to our ideal weight, or if we actually do sort our eating out, God, it's going to be such hard work staying there. It really, really is. Mm-hmm. So people often self-sabotage because of that. And we spoke about this before, didn't we? Well, this is also, it was the same with me, with my anorexia. I was terrified. I knew that if I dealt with my anorexia, I had to deal with other things that were going on in my life. So it was so much easier to stay in my own little world, because when you've got anorexia, you are consumed, you know. And I look back and I didn't, you know, I lost lots of friends, and I can count on one hand the friends that have been there all the way through it. But fair play to them for sticking around, because when you're in it, you know, it presents maybe as you just being aloof, you're not caring, you're not really, because this is the thing, is that even when my weight was okay, even when I seemed okay, even when I was doing okay at work, even when my relationship to the outside world looked okay, you know, I was still struggling. So, and so much so that I couldn't be there for my friends, I couldn't be there for my family, the anxiety, the stress, the worry was just so overpowering. Yet, I would have preferred, or I did prefer, to stay in that little cocoon rather than deal with the changes, the big changes that I knew I would have to make. And, you know, look at what you know, Jeff, and some people do on here do know, but, you know, I was not strong enough when I was in the grips of the eating disorder to deal with what I've had to deal with over the last 3 years. Yeah. Because, you know, and my fear was, and it was, to be honest with you, you know, the changes I had to make were as horrible as I thought they were going to be, have been as grueling, probably more so than I thought they were going to be. But do I have regrets? No, I do not have regrets, because going through those 2 or 3 years of recovery took a lot longer. Then once you go through recovery, then you've got to deal with all the shit that you knew you had to deal with. And then, it is hard. It is tough. But 2 or 3 years of dealing with that, plus the extra 7 or 8 years it took me to recover, you know, that is well worth having the next however many years I've got left, you know, to actually enjoy life. You know, whereas if I'd have carried on the way I had been, if I'd have carried on with, you know, going through this cycle of, because anorexia then morphed into other things. You know, there were times when it was maybe more of an orthorexia, or, you know, luckily, you know, never kind of, anyway, let's not go into it. But, you know, I don't know how strong I am to talk about it all right now. But, you know, I think having to deal with that really, really long journey, having to deal with that really, really long road, the benefits far outweigh all of that pain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sorry, definitely.
It's hard. It's still a hard topic to talk about.
Yeah. Well, that's really what happens when you start to deal with the underlying issues that are there. It's often much more difficult than just continuing to go about it business as usual in many ways. And that is why eating disorders can be really difficult for a lot of people to work past, because you have to do that deeper work to actually move past that, to recover from that. You know, anorexia, for example, is not just about getting your weight restored and going back and every time it gets low, going back in for weight restoration and getting it restored, and then just going about doing what you're doing and then go back and get weight restored. That's not managing it. But and it's really interesting. You see just with so many areas that people don't address that underlying issue. They would rather just continue doing things the way that it is. It's almost a way of coping with the deeper issues that they're not addressing. See that with emotional eating. I mean, emotional eating is one way of coping with your emotions. And, you know, we know too that when you have somebody who's really struggling with emotional eating, you don't just tell them to quit eating emotionally. You're taking away that security blanket in many cases without replacing it with something else to deal with the trauma or the emotions or whatever's going on in there. And so that's something that I think is easy to miss.
Yeah. And please, anybody who's watching, you know, please do. I would love to know if any of you, because I know some of you did reach out after my post this morning, if any of this resonates, if you've got any questions around any of it, please do ask. Or if any of you have got any experiences, maybe not yourself, but maybe family. I know it's a really difficult topic. To, you know, it's taken me a long time to kind of talk about it. But I think, you know, if there's anybody out there who any of this resonates with, maybe you don't agree with some of what we're saying, please do say it. Please do, because there are different schools of thoughts on this, I know. And I think what I was trying to say before as well, because I got off on a tangent, is that I know there are people out there that don't believe you can fully recover. I do. I can show. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying recovery means you're never on a journey, you're never on a path. It's like anything in life. Whether I had anorexia or not, there would still be triggers around food for me, because there are for everybody, okay? In the environment that we're living, in the culture that we're living in, you know, in for so many different reasons, you know? So I think to say that you can't recover, I think I don't know, I would love anybody who's watching, anybody who's in the mental health profession, anybody who, you know, is, because obviously we're not mentally health trained. I understand, we support and we encourage, and I know that we do help to improve the mental health of the clients that we're working with, absolutely, mm-hmm. because we're not fixers, okay? We're not going to go out there and just educate you. We're not going to go out there and just fix you. We're not going to go out there and tell you you've got to do it this way because this is going to be the best way for you to be your best self. That's not how it works. We do encourage you to be your best self. We do encourage you to, you know, to like yourself again and all that kind of stuff. But we do it from a very different place. We do it by creating yeah. that space for you to work through it, which is exactly what helped me. And I know this works because it helped me. People telling mm-hmm. me what to do. People going to the hospital for years, every week, for a dietitian to write me a diet plan that I threw in the bin every time I went home. What a waste of resources. Sorry, you know, I'm sorry because yeah. I know, you know, but it was so much bigger. It was so much more. And, you know, but you can recover. You can recover. But when I say you can recover, that doesn't mean to say you're never going to just be free of anything ever again, because that's just silly. Mm-hmm. But we can, I can be around food. I enjoy food. Food doesn't create me stress. Food, yes, still can be a coping mechanism for me, like it can anybody. Mm-hmm. I find myself emotionally eating sometimes. But because I know that's happening, and because I'm aware of it, and because I've done the work on myself, it's not going to end up in another relapse. I mean, say never, I'm not going to never say never. But, you know, I think when you can deal with all of the bigger stuff, that all of the stuff that was kind of maybe contributing to the eating disorder, like I've had to cut people out of my life, you know? And I'm not saying, because there was abuse when I was growing up, you know, then there was abuse in my marriage. There was abuse at work, all sorts of different things that led my eating disorder to A, be triggered. But actually, I'll tell you one thing. So A led it to be triggered, and then led it to be, you know, to continue as it was. But what I want to say is that I didn't, psychotherapy, going over and over and over and over it all I'm not saying it didn't help at all, because it did help me to see the links. Mm-hmm. But then I needed to just deal with that and accept that and move on. There was no good going over and over and over and over all of the trauma. And this is the thing I know with our clients. A lot of our clients have experienced trauma, and trauma is affecting them. But going over and over those experiences isn't always useful. It's actually having a space to recognize how they're impacting you, and then mm-hmm. dealing with those horrible, uncomfortable feelings and emotions that arise because of it. That's what I think is most powerful. Having that space, it's like I had a session with one of my clients yesterday, and she's got, you know, she's experienced some trauma, some family trauma, and she's going to be facing something head on next week. And she wasn't expecting this to come out in a session, but it came out in a session because she was like, I'm really, really worried that I'm going to resort to food and I'm going to resort to drink because of this. But if I was one of those coaches that was like, right, what's going on now? You need to eat X, Y, Z next week. Why aren't you doing this? There would never have been that space for her to go through that, deal with that.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. That's often what comes out in my sessions with clients also.
And then she messaged me the next day going, oh, you know, I know I said I wanted a really focused session on Barwash, but actually, and I said to her, I said, this session went just how you needed it to go. Mm-hmm. This session, you needed to talk about that. You needed the space to deal with that. And she was the next, she said, and so much of what you said made sense, so much of what I said, you know, and she told me about the action the next day. So, you know, and I'm really, really damn proud of her. But the other thing I did want to touch on as well, and I know we're going off on tangents, because I do want to come back to the kind of the autism and the eating as well. I really, really do, because, mm-hmm. I mean, while my son hasn't been diagnosed as autistic, he's definitely not neurotypical, yeah? And yeah. I find that difficult. I'm finding that difficult because, you know, I'm picking up on some strange eating behaviors with him. And, you know, luckily, and if I was where I was 10 years ago, Jesus Christ, the poor child didn't have a chance, you know. Anyway, we'll go on to that in a minute. But I wanted to just say something that reminded me here about how, you know, eating disorders are very complex, okay? And there are lots of reasons why they occur and why they develop. It's never just one thing. There are genetic, I mean, you know, I'll be quite honest, there was history of eating disorders in my family. So there are genetic things, there are obviously experiences, there's childhood, there's trauma in childhood that can contribute to it. Then of course there are, you know, there's the environment as well that can contribute to it. And I'll be honest, and then there'll be a trigger. There'll usually be a trigger. And for me, my trigger was somebody told me I had put on weight when I went to university. I went on a diet. That was it. I went on a diet. I went into a calorie deficit. That changed my thing. It changes the chemical, you know, it changes the way you think. And that was it.
Yeah.
The anorexia took hold. And you know, so what I want to say here as well is that there are so many coaches out there, PTs out there, that don't realize how putting people on one of their plans is going to trigger huge issues. I'm working with people, I'll be quite honest, I'm working with people who, you know, are probably bordering on eating disorders. Their weight is healthy, so the doctors have said no, thank you. I've had parents come to me, I've had educational providers come to me because they've said they've been to the doctor said their weight isn't low enough. This person clearly has an issue. Can you help us? And that's really sticky ground for me. Like, what do I do? I shouldn't get involved. However, this person hasn't been diagnosed with an eating disorder because, you know, even though she should be. Anyway, that's another topic. Why do I digress? I'm digressing because what I want to say as well is that I have had young people come into me who have literally ended up, you know, with disordered eating because of the program that their PT put them on. And I'm not going to name and shame, but there are some PTs out there that everybody, you know, that are really, really big in their industry and are getting results. But what the hell they're doing to the people up here in their minds is scary.
Sorry. Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that I know both of us really make a point of doing with each client is assessing the situation. I mean, I do it, and I think you do the same thing. My initial quote discovery call, which a lot of coaches will give their a free 10 or 15 minute discovery call to see if we'd be a good fit and if they can help you and to, you know, sell you on their services. I give at least an hour, and it's because I need to find out a lot more detail than just what are your goals? You know, how much weight do you want to lose? That kind of thing. I mean, that doesn't even come up for me. I need to have a long conversation and find out where is it that you feel like you're struggling? Does it look like I need to refer you to somebody else and all of that stuff? And it's unfortunate that we kind of talked about this a little before we came live. It's unfortunate that I think a lot of people look at nutrition as this somewhat innocuous kind of thing. It's like, oh, well, we want to lose weight. Here's a diet plan. Here's a different diet plan. You know, there's this this 75 hard is this popular program that a lot of people are doing now. It's kind of promoted as this self-discipline thing. And one of the principles of it, or one of the things that you have to do, is pick a diet. It has to be a structured diet plan. It doesn't really matter which one. And I'm thinking that is the most horrendous advice when you have somebody who's trying to make a change in their health, is to just say pick a diet, because that completely overlooks everything that you've been talking about here. Some people, a calorie restricted diet, a modest calorie deficit, is going to be perfectly fine. You know, I went on one number of years back. Got real lean, perfectly fine. It didn't really mess up my relationship with food. It worked out fine. There were things that I didn't like about it and stuff, but no harm, no foul for me. But that doesn't mean that's going to be the same case for somebody else. It just depends on the individual, what their history is with dieting. I grew up in a very different environment than a lot of people. Food has never been an issue for me. I've never had guilt or shame around it. I grew up in a very just, here's dinner, eat it, eat as much as you need, stop when you're full. You know, my mom, if we had a new food, she might say, here, give this a try, take a bite or two. I'd take a bite or two, and there was no pressure after that. And so, you know, while that might not have been ideal, it really was, that was probably the worst thing my mom did with food. So as you can imagine, the worst thing is your mom made you try a couple of bites of a new food. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, you know, I didn't have that bad, but somebody else who was forced, you know, I had a client recently who was talking about every time, you know, their dad was a Marine And every time that she would eat in his presence, he would just stare her down. And it was like, if she ate too much, he'd give her that look, or he'd make a comment. She didn't eat enough, the look or the comment. And there was like this militaristic sort of discipline around eating, and it just caused a horrible relationship with food developing over the years. And so, you know, it's this kind of, again, coming back, I kind of got off on a tangent there, but that's the whole thing, is finding out what is underlying it and addressing the underlying issues, not just simply throwing somebody on a diet.
Yeah. And what you've mentioned there, because I sometimes work with clients that have got, ADHD, that have got autism, etc. So the worst thing you could do is again, and this is why very often, you know, people that, you know, that aren't neurotypical, they'll struggle more than anybody with diets. Mm-hmm. They will. So again, putting them on just another diet is not, yes, focus on healthy habits, of course. Look at, you know, and again, create space for somebody to work through what their beliefs are, what their values are, and how that's impacting on the way that they're eating. But, you know, but you mentioned earlier as well about this kind of disciplinarian approach with children. Now, what impact would that have on a child that is autistic, Jeff?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, kids that are neurodivergent, so autism, OCD, and what by OCD, I mean an actual obsessive compulsive disorder diagnosis, not what a lot of people say, oh, I'm so OCD. That,
I'm definitely not OCD.
Yeah, but... Or ADHD, all of these different things where your brain actually processes input and sensations, sensory from outside of it. It processes that differently. It interprets social cues differently. Interprets, grief differently. And it looks at food differently. All of these things. Unfortunately, people with these various conditions or various different neurotypes are, I've had to really shift my way of saying that over the years, because, I have both of my daughters are on the spectrum, and over the years I've had to really realize that, to start thinking of it, and I'm getting off on a tangent here, but not start referring to autism as a disease or a condition. It's a different way of thinking, and that's a whole other topic, you know, the whole other thing. But it isn't
because actually, again, it comes down to this identification. Like, you know, like my son struggles because, you know, everyone is like, oh, he's always the naughty one. He's the one that's got the issues. He always says to me, "Mummy, there's something wrong with me. Why is there something wrong with me?" And I'm like, "Darling, there isn't." So he identifies with it. And it's the same as well, I've got to say, with anorexia, with eating disorders. That was the other point I tried to make before. I was told I wouldn't recover. I was told I could never really fully recover. I was told, and that just kept me stuck, because I was like, I'm just going to have to live with this forever. So what's the point in fighting? What's the point in trying to get better? And I think that's why I just want to say, so many people come to me and they just accept the way that things are, because they think it's never going to, I'm always going to be the emotional eater. I'm always going to be a binge eater. I'm always going to have, you know, I'm always going to be anorexic. Yeah. Don't identify. It's like with anorexic. How you talk about it, the language that you use is powerful. And I slip a lot. I know I do, because my mind goes in overdrive all the time, and I struggle with getting out what it is that I want to say. Which is why whenever people say I'm articulate, I'm like, what? Really? That's not what I'm talking about in my head. But anyway, anyway, it's great whenever we've had you always kind of reword exactly what I tried to say in a much, much better way. So I'm great that the message is getting across. And again, I'm going off on a tangent. But what I want to say as well is, with eating disorders and with any disordered eating, if we identify with it, if we say, you know, we've got anorexia, you know, I've got anorexia, I've got binge eating disorder, I'm lazy, I'm unmotivated, I'm this. You identify when all of it is, you know, it's not you, it's something that's happening, it's a behavior, it's something, there's a reason for it, there is, you know, if when we start identifying with it, it keeps us stuck, doesn't it? Because we think we can't change it, but we can. We can change it. We are pretty much born blank slate. I mean, we do have genetics, obviously, that, you know, do affect a lot of things. Yeah, okay. But a lot of the time, the way that we behave, the things that we do, there is a behavior pattern attached to it, isn't there?
Well, yeah, and it really comes down to that way that our brain processes information. Yeah. So my brain processes information in a different way than my daughters do. And, you know, one has ADHD and it doesn't manifest itself in not being able to sit still. It manifests itself in, and I think it goes hand in hand with the OCD also that one has, and where the brain doesn't shut off. There's constantly this hyperactive thought process going on. And you can imagine how that would contribute to development of an eating disorder and exacerbation of disordered eating patterns becoming a full-blown eating disorder. And we know from the research that people who have OCD, ADHD, and that are autistic and other neurodivergent ways of their brain working is that it contributes to this. And it's not just part of it is the way that their brain processes things, but it processes what other people say and what society says in a different way than a neurotypical brain would. And so, again, it's something we have to be very mindful of and careful of with our kids, with ourselves. If you have ADHD or you are autistic or you have, and it doesn't, you know, autism is a spectrum.
Completely.
And so, yeah, when some people, I think when they hear autistic, they think of the kid who is huddled in the corner, shaking and rocking and can't be touched and maybe not verbal, or they kind of think of, yeah, of that, but it's a huge spectrum. And again, there are some who look on the outside like what you were talking about with one of your kids and being the naughty one, and they can easily be thought of as just kind of a bratty kid or a naughty kid, when really it's just their brain processes information differently and they need to be spoken to differently. They need to be disciplined differently. They need to be managed differently.
And do you know what? This has been a biggest learning curve for me as well, because the thing, you know, it's led to, and it's so, you know, with my son, like, you know, I said about, you know, I'm just the naughty one. I'm just in, there's something wrong with me, mummy. And it's like, no, you know, and the self-sabotage is unreal. You know, mm-hmm. You know, if he can't deal with things, he can't cope with certain things. And so because he can't cope with it, or he gets told off, or like you said, it's about, you have to, and I am still learning, you know, because with my son, it was, you know, with everything that, because of the trauma, because of the experiences that we have had as a family, it was always difficult to know whether that was contributing, because he was so young. Yeah. And then there was all of the issues I was going through, because when he was born was, you know, there would have been attachment issues because I had severe postnatal depression, you know, it was probably more than that, if I'm honest. I think I probably, anyway, you know, so it's hard to know, but all of that will have impacted. But anyway, you know, that kind of, when you don't deal with it, when we don't help children, you know, to deal with those situations, when we just are like using the approach, you know, when we just kind of say like being authoritarian, or, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do it that way, it then leads to this cycle of self-hatred, of, you know, of self-sabotage, of, I'm seeing it, you know, manifest in all sorts of different ways with my son, you know, quite worrying in ways. Sometimes, but luckily.
Well, and you even mentioned that you're seeing it manifest in some food habits, food related habits. And some people would look at that as a nutrition issue, but it's not really. It's tied to food, but there's that underlying thing going on.
There's just some peculiar habits with him. I mean, I'm getting it with my 10-year-old as well, but that's just his age, I reckon. He just doesn't want to eat a meal right now. He's like, but yeah. Mum, I was like, I keep giving him dinner and he's like, he just doesn't want to eat his dinner. He'd just rather eat a McDonald's at the minute. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm failing my job as a nutritionist. And he's like, no, you're not. You're not. Just stop putting pressure on anybody. But anyway,
but you know, I can really relate to what you're saying about the one, you know, thinking of, you know, having one of your kids being seen as the naughty one and having these other things occur and then not really,
well, the same not really to me as a child. The same,
yeah, and a lot of times
I was pushed out, I was isolated, I was judged, I was made to feel like a piece of dirt on someone's shoe because I was different, because I struggled with all the stuff that was going on in my head. And it did. I mean, I was never a really naughty person, you know. God, my sister was the naughty one. She was the one that got, but I was the one that was more difficult to deal with, more difficult to manage. Yeah. And my mum always says it now, you know, she'll be honest. And, you know, we've had a very rocky relationship, very, very rocky relationship, and still do. But at times she'll say to me,
But you know, the whole thing that you're talking about, you know, your early years with the kids up until fairly recently, you were in this abusive situation. And, you know, I was also in a very abusive situation from the time, obviously, that was my first wife, the time that my kids were born. And we were married for 15 years. And so our daughters were 14 and 12 when she passed away. And during the autism and ADHD and OCD didn't even come out until they were adults, which I have a lot of guilt for that myself. And a lot of that was because when you're caught up in that abusive situation, you're on just sort of this just, I'm just trying to get through the day kind of a thing. And so when you see these things in your kids, like one of mine in particular was extremely social. The other one was not very social. And we just thought, oh, she's just kind of a loner. She just, you know, she's just not very outgoing. You know, she's very selective in her friend choices and all of that stuff. And she kind of got and she's not girly. She doesn't like this and that. And she got labeled and kind of put into this compartment by us as well as other people around us. And so when really there was actually something going on, her brain was working differently. She processed information differently. But because of the abuse situation that was going on, I was just trying to not lose it basically day to day, because it was the abuse in my first marriage was not a, you know, abusive outburst and then a few days or a few weeks of things going okay. It was literally a day, an everyday kind of a thing. And some of the things that my wife was doing to the kids, I didn't even know about until she had died and until the kids actually told me about it. Until they were adults, there's still things that pop up and they're like, did you even know about da da da? And they started realizing that any of the horrific stuff I didn't know about. The things that she would say, things that she would do, and it just over the top kinds of things. And you can imagine when that stuff's going on daily, constantly, and toward yourself and then also toward the kids, that it's very difficult to actually take the time to deal with things at the root cause, you know, to identify that your child may have autism or ADHD, because you're just seeing it as a behavioral outburst. You're seeing that you're thinking, okay, they act that way because their mom's acting that way. They act that way because there's so much strain going on. I just need to just try and calm the situation. And so basically it forced them to suppress in many ways who they were, suppress how their thought processes were. And, you know, when they did begin, you know, a lot of this stuff came out when one of my daughters was finally said, you know what, I need to get myself into therapy and going through therapy. has helped unpack all of that. And in many ways, it's brought out much more of who she really is as a person, because she's able to now let that out. Now I'm really just rambling, but coming back to that whole, I mentioned earlier, thinking of some of these different things as disease conditions or disabilities. You know, a lot of people think of OCD and ADHD and autism as something, oh, I wish there was a cure for that. And when you really start to think about it and really start to talk about it, it's like, would I really want my daughters to be able to take a pill that would change the way that their brain worked so that they were neurotypical? Yeah. And I think a lot of parents don't actually think about that. What would the ramifications of a cure for autism be? It would mean your child would not be who they are. They would be a completely different person. And so
this is the thing I always think, I would never, everybody tried to change me. Everybody mm-hmm. tried to, my mom tried, you've got to change. You need to change. Oh, I could go into some of the awful things that were said. But when I look back now and I think, how did they even get away with that? Do you know what I mean? But everybody, and this mm-hmm. is why I'm so adamant, like, you know, when people go, oh, you know, you need, don't get me wrong, I can definitely help to change the behaviours in my children by supporting them and encouraging them. But I can't just, you know, stop doing that, stop doing this, especially when it comes to, and even with the eating, you know, if I put pressure on my kids, like Leo is very difficult with his eating. I mean, he's healthy. He's very thin. Which does worry me sometimes. But, you know, in the mornings, he doesn't want to eat when he gets up. He's got so much going on and he's so active. And, you know, and as with a lot of children like him, you know, he struggles with his sleep because he's, you know. And so in the mornings, if I was to force him to eat, or I was to force him to eat in any way, shape or form that I think is right, it would mm-hmm. just backfire. Sorry, that's gone off a little bit. But what I'm trying to say is that when we try to discipline the behaviour or repair, but don't get me wrong, it's not like I don't discipline my kids. I do, but it's about, it's difficult, isn't it? It's really, really difficult because I'm still
living. It's hard. You know, you have that whole, one of the things that fortunately with my older daughter, she was actually diagnosed with something called nonverbal learning disorder, which at the time they said it's similar to Asperger's. Now they don't really use Asperger's. They just sort of autism spectrum disorder is more how they diagnose people. And but she manifested different things like difficulty and picking up on social cues and things like that. Yeah. And so I actually we did understand that. And so it did help when understanding that her brain worked in a little bit different way, so that when she acted, quote, inappropriately in a social situation, that we didn't look at it as a discipline issue. We looked at it more as a, okay, we need to try and find a way to help her understand and pick up on these cues and navigate this situation better. Now, my late wife took that as, she was very much a narcissist. And so when our daughter would act up, when she would act up or not navigate a social situation appropriately, she took it as looking bad on her as a parent. And so she would deal with it as a discipline issue, or a stop doing that, or keep your mouth shut kind of a thing. So kind of like, keep your mouth shut so you don't embarrass me kind of a thing, rather than, hey, how can we help teach this? And coming back to the abusive situation, unfortunately, I was unable to step in. And since I didn't deal with the underlying things that were going on in the relationship, I didn't really help the kids navigate their difficulties as well. And so,
but that, Jeff, you know, it's difficult. And without, this is going on to another topic now, but you know, I knew that was happening for me. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's why I had to make the changes I made, as heartbreaking and as difficult as they have been. I knew that whilst I was still, and this was after this was after recovery, but this was while I was still in the abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And because I'd recovered, I could see what was going on. And I was like, if I stay like this, I'm never going to be able to give the children what they need. When does that make sense? But I think what I do want to just kind of, because we're going to have to wrap it up and we do have to because I've got a call. But the other thing is that I just want to also highlight how this does link to how we work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we just trying to tackle the behaviour there and then, just trying to think, right, okay, we're going to stop you from eating, overeating by telling you you can't do this. We're going to, you need to follow this plan if you want to overcome your emotional eating. You need to, when emotional eating comes along, when you're feeling that you want to eat, go and have a bath and that's going to deal with it. Now, don't get me wrong, further down the line, a bath may help you deal with it. But until you understand the triggers, until you understand what is getting you there, no amount of bath is ever going to deal with it. So yeah. I think it just, again, goes to highlight how it's about creating that space. It's about understanding the person just as much as we need to understand our children, their experiences, what they've been through, and then giving them the chance to work things through themselves, giving them the tools, giving them the insight, giving them the understanding to be able to, because this, you know, no sticking plaster, no one size fits all. You know, even in education, it drives me insane. The labeling is useful in some ways, but in some ways not. Because every child needs personalization. Every child needs to be seen as a unique individual. And sometimes labeling can take that away a little bit. However, like I said, it does have its benefits because you as a parent, you need to understand. However, my sister, her son, had actually, I shouldn't really talk about that. But anyway, I'm just saying there are people that have been through the system. And, you know, sometimes, anyway, no, I'm not going to go into that because that will open another can of worms and I probably shouldn't talk about some things that maybe some people don't want me to talk about. Anyway, but yeah, so I think, again, it just highlights how stop trying to look for the perfect fix, stop trying to look for the miracle cure. I had a conversation with someone today and it was, oh, you know, I'm going to try, sleep is a real issue for me. I'm going to try CBD oil. No, you know, your diet's crap. You're not moving enough. You're not de-stressing enough. No amount of CBD oil is going to stop you having a heart attack further down the line because of the lifestyle choices you're making right now.
Yeah.
Yes, use CBD oil if once you tackle all of that and you still can't relax. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but what I'm trying to say here is that stop looking for quick fixes, stop looking for plasters. The only way you're going to sustainably, you know, make the changes that you want to make in whatever area they are is to, you know, go inside, usually with support, with help, go inside and really figure out what is going on and work out what is going to work for you as an individual.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good way of describing kind of how we work with people. And you know, when you look at these different things that you've gone through in your life and these different challenges and trauma and things like that, I think one of the things that I do, I am sort of somewhat proud of myself by the fact that I feel like I've managed to take those things and learn from them and actually turn them into a positive. It's made me a better, you know, I worked as a children's pastor for a number of years. And at that time, I was in the middle of the abuse. And so I dealt with people in a very different way during that time than I do now, because now that I'm out of that situation and have worked through some of those things myself and understand myself better and understand people better, I'm able now to really turn those negative experiences into something positive that I can help other people now work through issues. Even though I personally haven't struggled in the food area, I struggled in the other areas. And since often the food is just a symptom for other people, whereas my issues manifest in something different, ultimately dealing with some of those other, and often it's just identifying them, understanding them. And sometimes that's what we do with, we understand how these different things manifest themselves in different food behaviors as nutritionists. And so that's how we can often help people. Hey, you know what? Sounds like there may be something here, and they might uncover it and then realize, hey, you know what? They need to go get some therapy somewhere else. In fact, I had a client recently do this exactly that. Through our work together with nutrition, where she's made a lot of progress, she realized, hey, I need to see a counselor on some other things. And so she went off and was now working in that. And so sometimes that's also what we do too.
There's a couple of really key points there as well that I want to end on because I need to go. Mm-hmm. But the one of them is about how you learn from things because you took away that judgment, you took away that beating yourself up, and you got curious and you learned from it and you turned it into a positive. Again, this is what we coach our clients to do. If something doesn't go to plan, if something doesn't go, don't judge yourself, don't beat yourself up about it. Get curious as to why it happened, learn from it. It's an opportunity to learn and to grow. Beating yourself up about something never, ever stopped you from doing it again. Beating yourself up about something never led to change. Curiosity led to change. Then the second thing as well is, what was the other thing that I wanted to say that you mentioned? This was it, about how we never, you spoke about how, you know, sometimes people will need to go to therapy, or, you know, we work with our clients in a very different way to a lot of people do in the industry. But I just want to say as well is that I think that a lot of the reasons why, because people do, there are every other coach out there is talking about mindset change, is talking about personalization, but so many of them, it means nothing. And I'm sorry to say it, you know, because I think the problem is that we are trained to believe that we've got to get people results. We are trained to believe that we are only any good if someone can follow our plan and get results as a result of that. And that needs to change. That needs to change in the industry as a whole. It just goes to show how unregulated and the industry is. It's, you know, because it does need to change. We are going to get, we could get our highest results in the short term. It's so easy to get clients to lose weight over 6 weeks or 12 weeks or 16 weeks. It's so easy to get them to do it. And if I did that and someone would rave about me, let's go back a year later when they've gained all that weight, if we haven't done the deeper work. All right. Yep. It's so easy to do. If you want to get a client, and sometimes, and I'm going to hold my hands up, sometimes clients will come to me and they may not get the aesthetic or the physical results that they wanted in the time that they work with me, but they get all of the other stuff, which means that they then go on to achieve what they wanted to achieve. And that, to me, I would much rather, you know, that happens for a client, that they can make those mental, psychological, cognitive changes that mean that they improve their life permanently, rather than just for that 6, 8, 12 weeks that they're working with me. Because it's almost like a badge of honor if we can get our clients those results. But if they're just sticking plasters, it's, but again, like I said, that's what we've been taught to believe. We've been taught to believe that, you know, we've got to give clients a plan. We've got to give clients a good and a bad food list. We've got to, you know, to get, anyway, I go off on one. I'm going to shut up now. I'm going to shut up because it's been over an hour and I've gone on to the topic. But thank you so, so much. If anybody, I'm really, really sorry because I know we were late, which means that we might have missed some people that did want to watch this. But if you're watching, if you're still watching, please do. Oh, you made it, Thomas. You made it. Thank you. We are just about to but if anybody is watching, still watching, please just, you know, say hello or goodbye so that we know that you have been watching. And if anybody's watching the replay, of course, hashtag replay. And if anybody is watching and any of this resonates and you want to reach out to any of us, please just drop us a message. I know even my post this morning, people have been reaching out. Please do, you know, please do reach out. Don't let this stuff carry on if it resonates.
Yeah, definitely. And I know both of us are more than happy to reach out even if you're not thinking that you can work with one of us right now, but you are trying to find out who can I go talk to about this? This is an area I'm struggling. Do you have any recommendations? Should I go see a dietitian? Do I need to pursue an eating disorder diagnosis or something? I mean, reach out and we can chat with you a little bit and just kind of help you figure out maybe where you should start looking. I mean, that's something too that I like to make sure people are aware of, that we're not just about trying to sell our services to people. No. We really do want to help people, point you in the right direction and that kind of thing too.
Absolutely. And I do. Yeah. That happens quite a lot as well. I get, you know, I will refer on, or I'll tell you the best places, you know, especially for parents as well.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
If you've got a child, you know, a young person with an eating disorder, that isn't something that, you know, isn't out of our scope, but we can definitely point you in the right direction. Some people that may be up there. Okay, thanks ever so much, Jeff. Thank you, everybody who has taken the time to watch this. I'm sure it's a topic that we can pick up again at some point. But for now, the sun is shining now, finally here. enjoy the rest of your day. You enjoy your day, Jeff. Anybody else?
Yeah, me too.
The rest of your day, and I'll catch you all soon.